Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking all things NFL. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well. It was a wild day yesterday. It was a late night. I'll put it that way.
I bet.
I would imagine that it was. So let's just start right there, Charles. Obviously, the John Gruden news coming out last night that he is resigning from the Las Vegas Raiders. We knew about the racial remarks over the weekend coming from the investigation into the Washington football team, and now way more incendiary remarks that have come out about John Gruden as well. I guess, number one, just your reaction to this story, where it goes from here, and what this means in terms of how the NFL is going to handle this, because as Joe has pointed out multiple times on the show today, probably not just a John Gruden problem when it gets down to it.
Yeah, I mean, to address what Joe said, I think that there's no doubt in my mind that a number of the attitudes that John Gruden reflected in those emails, if you were to comb through the IT department, you know, of every single NFL team and pull emails, and, you know, this comes out in the, 650,000 email review of the Washington football team franchise, you're probably going to have a lot of people that are in similar trouble at this point. I think the underlying thing here with John and what came out in those emails, and you're looking at from 2010 to 2018, right up to the point where he takes the job with the Raiders.
Yeah.
It's reflective of a lot of the attitudes that existed in the NFL up until this point, and I think still exist. And you're in a position with the NFL where I think the league is trying to transition away from a lot of those attitudes. It's trying to be more inclusive with the fan base. It's trying to be more socially conscious. I know some fans don't want to hear that, but the reality is the last few years, the NFL has tried to be a more socially conscious league. It's tried to put away some of the, just some of the stances that were not open to having fans or certain individuals in the league or courting different lifestyles, and clearly John wasn't on board with that. And I think what's remarkable about it is he was, when you kind of look at the emails on balance, he was very much not in favor of a lot of the direction of the league, and yet he got back in. He came back in, you know, and you have to know at that point in 2018, when you've expressed the opinion you express, you feel the way that you feel, you are putting yourself into a precarious situation when you're walking back in 2018. Now, you can never know that these emails are going to come out, but when you say what you say about Roger Goodell, when you say what you say about Damari Smith, you know, the certain tenor of homophobia in some of those emails, I mean, we could go on and on. When that stuff comes out, you have a league office that looks at John and goes, we're going in this direction, you're going another direction. Like, you're not with the momentum that we're trying to carry into the next, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 years. And I think it's pretty clear that the league fragged him on this. Like, I don't think there's any question about that. I think the league looked at the Raiders and said, here's the material, take care of this, do what you got to do. Mark Davis didn't do that. And then I think once it got past Gruden coaching this weekend, I think they were done. It doesn't surprise me at all that this gets leaked to the Wall Street Journal. It doesn't surprise me it gets leaked to the New York Times, because that's where Park Avenue is. And the people who held all of these emails, it was the league office. And I think the league's like, we're not going to sit here, and he's not going to continue to be employed when we know what he's bringing to the table and what he said over the last decade. And man, this thing's got a lot of layers. It really does. It's pretty remarkable when you just sit down and you break down every single facet of what went into this and how this happened so quickly.
Well, two things moving forward on this, Charles. One, is John Gruden ever hireable again, either in coaching or broadcasting? And two, how many more interesting emails and comments might emerge from this investigation as we move forward, which, of course, has been totally locked down up until now?
Right. You know, it's, in terms of his hireability, I have no clue. I mean, I don't know. Nowadays, like, we're there's platforms for everyone, and again, I tried to, when I wrote today, I said, look, this is going to fall into the area that has not only infected sports but also transcended sports over the last 5, 6, 7, 10 years, and that is, it becomes red versus blue, left versus right. There's definitely a political tenor to this, and then, you know, not only that, it's the America that people wanted or had versus the America that they live in now and where we're going. And he, oddly enough, I think these emails, when you look at how people are reacting to this, it feels like there's camps forming, like the same way that there's been camps forming around every single social issue that's cropped up in sports over the last several years. And so to me, when that happens, I mean, let's be real here. He'd have an opportunity. There are certain networks that John Gruden's like wants to paint himself as a martyr and a representation of how, you know, I've been ousted in this change that is just so unfair. There are going to be people that would be willing, I think, to let him have that platform. And, you know, that's the free world we live in. So I don't want to say he's never going to have another opportunity to have a job. I don't know about coaching. But I mean, from an analyst standpoint or a political standpoint or whatever else he might want to do, I could see that. As far as the investigation itself, I'll say this, Bruce Allen, the general manager / team president of Washington, knew a lot of people in the league. He's connected to a lot of people in the league. And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, is this just John? Is this John talking to Bruce? There's no one else. And it was clear that Bruce initiated some of these conversations. So I'm like, this is the only guy that you know, he spoke to. I wonder, though, and again, I truly believe the league was behind some of this, if not all of it. I wonder if John having the position of power that he had is different than an area scout or, you know, a head of marketing somewhere, or, you know, whatever else. So I just, in my mind, I wonder, does the NFL, is this really what this is now? Is there going to be like a hit list? Like, is the NFL going to go, okay, here's all these emails. Now here's all these individuals. Now here we're going to go out and we're going to set out to all these different organizations and go, here's this problematic thing. And now we have to, you know, move forward on all this. It's a can of worms. I'll say that. Like, if the NFL opening this up also opens the NFL up to a lot of criticism too, because remember, it came in the midst of an investigation of this Washington franchise that
has had some problems.
I'm sorry.
Has had some problems.
Yeah, it had some problems. And this investigation, remember, Dan Snyder gets fined $10 million. He effectively gets removed from the day-to-day operations of his franchise. And yet there was no real detail about why exactly they came to that conclusion. And in the middle of there being no detail, the league's lawyers go, well, the reports weren't even written. The findings weren't even written. It was all the reports that we got were oral from this investigator, which you're like, why do you do that? Well, you do that so that there's no written record. Why do you not want a written record? Because then there's things like these emails where if the league doesn't act on them and they get out later, it looks like a big cover up.
What a league.
I'm just telling you, this is like, I'm sitting there and I'm staring at this, and it's funny because I'm gonna write something in the future, probably in the next couple of days. I think one thing that people should remember here, the league's embroiled in a potential $1 billion lawsuit with the city of St. Louis, okay, over the relocation of the Rams franchise. They are trying so hard to prevent forms of discovery that are similar to what we just saw go down in Washington. Ask yourself why. Probably because they know, hey, we had pretty much control of a lot of the discovery in the Washington situation. We wouldn't in St. Louis. And what if there is something in there that we don't know about? What if there is, who knows what was said in the relocation of that franchise. And, you know, and again, this is a potential billion-dollar lawsuit that they're sitting there going, man, this Washington thing started, and there were landmines there we didn't even see. We couldn't even see coming. John Gruden wasn't part of this Washington investigation. This just happened. And so this is why when the league gets embroiled in litigation, you see a lot of settlements. The Colin Kaepernick thing. Hey, there's a settlement. There's NDA signed, and to this day, you've never seen really a shred since that NDA has been signed of the discovery that came out or the interviews. Remember, all these owners sat for depositions in the Kaepernick thing. There's a reason why that is an ironclad NDA, and I'm sure that's because the league's like, nah, we don't need any of this stuff getting out later. We'll just pay for this one and move forward.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, obviously the Bills take down the Chiefs on Sunday night. Titans will be taking on the Bills coming up on Monday Night Football. In your mind, are the Bills the best team in the NFL right now?
Yeah, I think they are. I think, you know, when they ran up against the Chiefs, what was intriguing to me is you had the number one offense in the league via DVOA versus the number one defense, the Bills, when you measure DVOA, I mean, which is probably the truest measure of offensive production, defensive production, doing the right thing in the right situation and winning that scenario. You had an offense that did it, you had a defense that did it, and which was going to break. Clearly, the Bills broke the Chiefs. And what I thought was interesting was they controlled them physically. They forced Patrick Mahomes into scenarios where he was making mistakes. You know, when you turn him over, what, three? I think he threw a couple of picks. He had a fumble late. It's really impressive. And then on the flip side of that, I think Josh Allen played a great game. I didn't think that was his best game. Not even, I mean, I think Josh Allen has Lamar Jackson, like what we saw with Lamar Jackson against the Colts. I think Josh Allen has that kind of ability to flip a switch at some point against a team and to roll up 500 yards in offense by himself. And so, yeah, I think the Bills are probably the number one team in football. Just when you look on balance at how potent that offense can be, but then defensively just absolutely wrecking the Chiefs at this point. It's one thing I do want to say, though. You know, we're still only five games in the season. I feel like every week we're kind of like, well, is this the new team? You know, it's like, oh, it's the Rams. Oh, no, it's the Cardinals. Oh, it's the Bills. I think we're going to have a lot of this as we go down the stretch where, you know, it'll be, okay, is it the Chargers now? Oh, by the way, the Cowboys look great. It's such a wide open year this year. I personally expected to have this dominance of the Chiefs come back and, you know, they put the offensive line back together. And instead, I feel like it's so completely wide open early on because there are so many really good offenses. And I think there are still some defenses, though, that could completely disassemble the picture as we know it, like Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland's defense, even though look, they've gotten to a boat race with the Chargers, I still think Cleveland down the stretch could be that team where they develop the front defensively they need to be effective the way the Buccaneers were last year, or it could be the Chargers, or, you know, the Cowboys defense is really good with DeMarcus Lawrence not being there right now. What happens when he comes back? You're going to get the Titans fans, this, you're going to get a measure here. You're going to find out where exactly can we really compete with a team that, you know, at this point has to be the Super Bowl favorite in the AFC early on, but still they are the favorite at this point, I would say.
Well, I was going to ask you about Lamar Jackson. I mean, in the midst of this bombshell last night, I couldn't go to bed because I couldn't take my eyes off that game, which the Colts completely botched. But, I feel like Lamar Jackson has taken his game to another level. The way he stood in that pocket and hit tight windows and just made every play. I mean, you agree with that? I mean, is he – I mean, I know it's also early. We talk about great teams. Let's talk about the MVP because it was Russ Wilson for sure a year ago, and then it wasn't at all. But
right.
Lamar Jackson, how good is he?
I think that was the best game I've ever seen out of him in the NFL, on the NFL level. I mean, definitely passed 37-43 is absurd. It's a joke. And you know, there was a point in this game where it looked like they might get blown out. And you know, he just, you know, to bring them back the way that he did, to do it both running and passing. But as you said, to make window throws is so impressive. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, as I'm working on the Gruden thing, I'm like, this game's on in the background. I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying to do this Gruden. And there's this game going on and I want to watch this.
Thanks a lot, Gruden.
Really. Thankfully it's DVR'd so I can watch it again, but it was, it was an impressive a passing game, and if that is a representation of who he can be moving forward, and I think a big part of this too was Mark Andrews. I'm telling you, when Lamar has truly been at his peak as a passer, Mark Andrews has been a big part of that. And there have been some struggles to kind of get Mark Andrews to where they believe Mark Andrews is, which is in their minds they're like, hey, this guy is a top three tight end in the league. He's a George Kittle type. He can be a Kelsey type. You know, maybe not just from a body standpoint, but in terms of the impact, he could be a Gronk type. And this was a game where he looked like that player. But Lamar, afterward, to see him talk, and I think he dropped an F-bomb on TV.
He deserved it.
He deserved it. They totally coasted over. Like, I would just keep going. But he felt like he's kind of got that chip on his shoulder where he's like, you know, look, I know I can be this player. I'm paraphrasing here, but it seems to me that he knows he can be this MVP caliber player. And I think he was frustrated too. They went a long time where their wide receivers, no one was healthy in the preseason. There was no chemistry from an offensive standpoint. You know, they were struggling to get to their identity of being like a running team. And when they couldn't do that, could he be the passing quarterback they needed? It's not a great Colts team, honestly. They're struggling, but, I think he showed what the possibilities are. To me, it was almost like, not quite from a running standpoint, but you guys can appreciate this. I mean, remember when we used to watch Vince Young at Texas and he would just dominate teams like, you know, USC, Michigan, like some of those big games where you're just like, oh my God, this guy's unbelievable. Like, that's how Lamar Jackson felt last night. I'm like, this guy is like unstoppable. When he plays like this, he's on a level where I don't know that there's really any defense that's going to stop him.
Hey, thanks for bringing up Vince Young, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, you know, we're talking a completely different era there.
Yes. I hear you.
I can tell you some Vince Young Titan stories.
Oh, I bet.
Some funny Titan stories.
I think we may have to have a special episode just for that at some point.
We might need
to. Literally, in all my years, the only time I think I've ever gone to talk to a guy in a locker room and got into his locker and stood there and seen so many pictures of himself in his college uniform, like action shots. And like, I still to this day, I can't ever. I was like, man, this is interesting. He really likes this. He really likes these photos of himself in Texas. It always resonated with me. And I think it was like at that time he's battling like Kerry Collins for the job. And I looked in Kerry Collins' locker and literally there was like a little 4-inch by 4-inch photo of like his kids. Two different worlds right now.
That's right.
He was good in college.
That's right. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to come on with us. And maybe next week we'll just have a Vince Young hour with you.
Yeah, that's we can fill that one up.
Get those old notebooks out.
All right, guys. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Man. We appreciate you. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. That was John Gruden, I believe yesterday, at his press conference before all the things came out last night in the New York Times that really sent it over the edge. And now John Gruden out as Las Vegas Raiders head coach. Thanks to Charles Robinson for coming on in the last segment and shedding a little bit of light on that situation. By the way, in a few minutes, got Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, coming up. So looking forward to that. Joe, it's one of those things where, as Charles pointed out, not only the Gruden situation itself, but as far as the investigation is concerned, you heard him bring up the number, 650,000 emails, roughly, that they're combing through. What else is in those emails, and is there anything else that we could see potentially come out in those emails? That's going to be something to monitor over the next few days.
Well, and is this just, I mean, he used the term hit list. Is it just like the NFL's like, okay, this, I don't care, I don't care. Oh, yeah, this person. Okay, let's, here we go. Draw that out of there because for whatever reason, we don't like this person. Leak this wherever. This stuff happens.
Yeah.
I mean, like, was Bruce Allen on the other end? Like, you know.
Now, John.
John, those bigoted comments, I completely disagree. I don't know. But, yeah, I imagine there's some more interesting stuff in there. And the entire, I mean, look, we already know. Look at, like, what we know about the Washington football team.
Yeah.
The cheerleaders at the, I mean, this awful, disgusting stuff. And they're, you know, the fact that there's some investigators are like, let's just speak all this stuff and not write anything down ever, should probably tell you some of the information they're finding out there. So,
yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. Who would have ever guessed out of this? I mean, I'm sure John Gruden didn't. Out of this investigation of them, just the fact that he happened to email his buddy a decade ago turns into this. But it's also, I mean, those words yesterday, again, he was talking about the D. Smith comment.
Correct.
Which, I mean, frankly, look, you can make the argument. I mean, it is absolutely a racist trope, okay? But you can make the argument that that wasn't your intent. And then it's up to really, like, it's up to the people around you to believe you're not.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that came out yesterday, there's no defense for it. There's nothing you can say. And, of course, he doesn't have to say anything now because he's just resigned and probably go away for a while.
And one thing I wanted to get to Charles with, but we just didn't really have time, I wonder what happens with his money now. He's still owed a lot of money on that contract. My guess is there's a settlement, but I don't know. That's going to be interesting to see when information comes out on that, what exactly happens with the rest of the contract. I mean, he signed a 10-year $100 million contract, which we all looked at the time and said, huh, for John Gruden to come coach the NFL, huh? How about that? And here we are. I believe he was still owed $66 million, roughly.
Right. I'm sure he'll get a chunk of it. But it is also, take it away from all this stuff. You know, wow, what are you doing, Mark Davis? Like, what?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Mark Davis.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there was never any justification for that much faith to be put in John Gruden in the first place, just from a football perspective.
Yes.
So, and again, as I made on the show, of course, there's a million things that are written. Charles wrote a really good thing, and he sort of said some of it on our segment about what this means to the NFL. But as Marcus Thompson wrote, and I said earlier on the show, the Raiders, I mean, this is probably the most progressive organization in sports history because of Al Davis. I mean, that's really his legacy, not caring at a time when people did care, making a black man a head coach and not playing in Mobile, Alabama because of segregation, and Amy Trask, the first female chief executive in the NFL, Tom Flores. Now they have the first openly gay player. I mean, that's a big part of, like, the identity of this organization as it's moved around, and you think of the Pirates and the fan, but that's a big part of the legacy. That's his legacy, and so – and someone tweeted at me, like, Al Davis would have fired him the day that the first thing came out. And I'm like, hey, you're probably right.
Probably so.
So the fact that he represents them, I mean, any team, doesn't matter. The same outcome, but it's just interesting that this is the organization that he happens to head up.
Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Rock Bottom Brewery this Monday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 5 to 7 p.m. live at Rock Bottom Brewery on Broadway prior to the Titans taking on the Buffalo Bills. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. When we come back, we'll be joined by Preds TV analyst Chris Mason. The season getting underway in 2 days for the Nashville Predators. We'll get hot and heavy into the Preds discussion next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Nashville Predators back in action this week. The regular season now 2 days away for the Predators. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goaltender, Chris Mason. See, Mace, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
What's up, fellas? Good to be back and talking hockey, and we're only a few short days away, so Thanks for having me. Looking forward to a great season.
Absolutely. Looking forward to having you every Tuesday at 9:30. And C. Mace, obviously, a little bit of a different look for the Predators this year. They've gotten younger. Philip Tomasino, Cody Glass into the mix now, including some young guys on defense. And outwardly, the expectations not as high as they typically have been the last 5-6 years with this group. I'm curious, from a player's point of view, especially veteran guys in that locker room who have been through a lot of things in this league, when you have expectations that are lower on the outside, how do you go about handling that as a locker room? What was kind of your experience in handling that during your playing days?
Well, the one thing I know from the playing days is everybody's expectations doesn't really correlate to the expectations inside the locker room. But I will tell you this, it does really take a lot of pressure. I think, you know, we always go back to 2017. I think after that year, you know, they got in as the 8th seed, essentially the 16th seed. And since then, I think the expectations have been just, you know, it's Stanley Cup or bust type of thing. And as a player, I think it really, and a team, it puts a lot of, maybe unfair expectation on the team, and everything, you know, anything less than that, or anytime they struggle, it's, you feel that. And I feel that this team over the last few years has really had those expectations externally, but I think it's affected them as well in a negative way, you know, the last little bit. So as a player, you're like, all right, every expert, everybody, this is the time for projections and predictions and all this kind of stuff, has Nashville as the 7th in the Central, which is a very tough division. There's a lot of good teams. So as a player, I think you use that as motivation, and you say, all right, well, nobody thinks we're going to do anything, but we're going to surprise a lot of people. And, you know, the way that they've, I know it's just preseason, but, you know, they've looked well. And the guys that, you know, we've talked at about ad nauseum, Johansson, Forsberg, Duchesne, they've all come back. They had a great preseason. They look hungry. You know, we talked about at the end of last season with you guys, and you're looking for these guys to come back with a chip on their shoulders, something to prove. They're going to need them to step up, because they're going to have to get offense from somewhere. They've lost a lot of guys that provided that last year for them. So, you know, they're a huge part. They're a huge part of the success this team's going to have this season. And so far, I think it's good. And Saros, too, for me, is another massive. He's probably the biggest key to this whole thing. I think we know that. And, new era, I guess, in Nashville with Pekka being gone. And it's going to be his team. And in the past, he's gotten off the slow starts. The team has as well. But I don't think they're going to be able to afford to do that. But, again, Juice had an unbelievable preseason. He looked great. He looked mid-season form in the games. Didn't have easy games to play, especially his last two. Got a ton of rubber, and he looked great. So, to me, the expectations being what they are, I think it's fair. But I think it's a good thing for this team, because I just feel this group and the way they play, they thrive on that underdog role. And I think if they all have, that little chip on their shoulder to prove people wrong, I think that's exactly what this team needs, for them to allow them to have some success this season.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, you know, when I think about it, Chris. Like, I mean, 2 years ago, going into that season, there was a lot of talk around here and even just around the league, like, is this the most talented Preds team that they've had? And now 2 years later, like you said, the expectations externally are not high. No doubt, you know, the guys have discussed that and would like to prove that wrong. I feel like that's directly related to the two of the guys you mentioned. They're Johansson and Duchesne. And I guess, you know, the expectation that their production is going to be about what it has been in the last couple of years. How motivated do you think they are? And do you think that not being protected is one of those things that maybe gave both of them a little extra burst of energy in the offseason to get ready for this season?
Well, I think you throw it all into the pot, and it's all motivation for these guys. You know, they have these are what everybody's saying about them. Look, they all had down years. They know it. They weren't protected. That says something right in itself. I know they know it's a business, and you want to protect so many people, and you're trying to expose contracts. They get that too. But it does sting a little bit when you're left available and you don't get taken. But I think it's everything, you know, for these guys. And Philip Forsberg's a guy too. I think he could just be a star in this league. He's got the potential to, you know, he's got the skill and potential to get 30, 40 goals every single year. And for these guys. And I love John Hines putting them together. He's like, you know what, you guys want to show me, you guys want to prove, we're going to give you every opportunity. Matt Duchene got shuffled around on a bunch of different lines. It's tough for a player with his skill set to be, you know, change. He's on the wing sometimes, he's center. Now they're going to have the opportunity to play together and put these guys together. It looks like they'll be on the same unit as the power play. And they look really good in the preseason. There's some chemistry there. There's something that to like early on here. I know that's always subject to change, but I think you put all those things in the pot, and as a player, you're coming in hungry. And I think when you have that motivation, that internal drive to prove people wrong, I think it's such a valuable thing, and you have to have that in this league. And especially right now, all three of those guys, they're the guys. You know, you talk about Cody Glass and Phil Tomasino. I don't know what that's going to be like. You know, Tomasino is a young player. He had an okay preseason, showed some flashes, but wasn't great in my opinion. Cody Glass came in, had some moments where he looked okay. There's going to be a transition period there. It's never easy, you know, going to a new team. It takes a little bit of time, I think, to get adjusted. But those are guys that, you know, you look and you're replacing a Cali Yarncroke, Victor Arvidsson. You have these holes to fill in your roster. Eric Halla, who had a great finish to the season last year as well. So these are the guys that you're going to look at. If they're going to have a chance to make playoffs, you're going to need not only, you know, that top line to make an impact, but you're going to need these guys that they acquired to make impact too. And Philip Tomasino, young guy, but you know, he's been given every opportunity. They said from last year he's going to have a good chance to make the team. It looks like he has at a training camp. But it's a different world in the NHL. So we'll see what his impact is. And I know he'll get better as the year goes on. And I look at another guy is Elli Tolvanen. Looks like they're going to try to play him in a little different position on the power play to start the season, more of a one-time option there. That's a player that could take a big step, you know, in the right direction and be a real impactful guy for this team, and, you know, something that maybe, you know, the outside experts aren't really counting on. But there's just so many unknowns, you know, to what this team is, because there's so many new faces and there's so many different storylines, you know, going into this season of what this team's going to be.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. See, Mace, one intriguing spot to me is who's going to play next to Ekholm on defense. I think they're going to start with Myers, but Fabreau obviously an option there as well. I feel pretty good about Josi and Carrier, at least to begin the season, but can somebody emerge, whether it's Myers or Fabreau, and really establish themselves alongside Ekholm? That's obviously a really important spot for this team, and I'm really interested to see how that process goes.
Yeah, that's a great point, Robbie. That's a big, you know, you lose a guy, you know what you're going to get with Ryan Ellis. You're going to get solid, you know, defense. The guy plays the game the right way. He's a warrior out there. He contributes offensively. He's a good, you know, all-around defenseman. And that's a big spot. Like, the top four has always been, you know, a major strong point for this team. And now, you know, you're going to have Philip Myers come in. He's a big guy. Again, only preseason. Looked good in preseason, and you're going to have a big, you know, physical pair with Ekholm and Myers to start. But then, you know, Fabreau's a guy that I thought, you know, he had a tough start to the season last year. I thought when he came back from, you know, suspension and injury there that he looked really good. I think they want him to be, you know, stronger defensively, be harder in the defensive zone, and I thought he did play with a good edge. But, you know, so far his tenure here has been, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, some really good parts and then some, like any young player getting adjusted to the league, there's been some down parts where he hasn't been, you know, as consistent as they'd like to see. But again, your young defenseman, his best years are, he's coming into those years right now where he's seen enough of the league. He kind of understands the lay of the land and he's a player with a lot of upside. If you can get some consistency in his game, they'll have some options there, and Fabreau's a guy they can easily move up to play with Ekki.
Chris, you mentioned UC Saros' slow starts. I wonder, just because it's just a totally different dynamic, right, for him this year, knowing that he is, it's flat out, as you said, his team, Pekkarinen, has retired. Do you think that might help him start quicker?
I do. I just think there's no question. There's no wondering if I play a couple games, are they going to go to Pekka? You know, it's his team. And I say this all the time on the broadcast. I'll say it privately to anybody when they ask me. I think he's one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. There's no doubt about that. Technically, he's technically the best goalie in the world. And I don't just say that because I work for the Predators. I love goaltending. I analyze these guys right down to every little detail. And you know, the thing with him is there's, I guess, having Pekka here over these years, there's always that security blanket, and you've kind of unseated, you know, the god of the Nashville Predators in Pekka Rinne. And that's not an easy thing to, although that's your career goal, it's still there. You have a lot of respect, and we've talked about their relationship and how close they are. But this is Juuse's team. He's a leader on this team. He's not young Juuse Saros anymore. And I think he's really embraced it. And, you know, I've talked to some of the people on the inside. He's really embraced that leadership role and being a veteran guy and really owning that position as the number one, unheralded number one goaltender. So I think for him coming in, the guy works like a beast off the ice too. So he's put in all the work, had a great preseason, and I think he's going to be ready to go. He's got a lot to prove too. You know, and this team is going to need the caliber of goaltending that he had last year. The way that they play, I thought they gave up a ton of shots in preseason, but I thought they defended well. They didn't give up, you know, there wasn't a lot of breakdowns. There wasn't a lot of, you know, grade A opportunities. And when there was, you know, Juuse, he looked like he did last year. So that'll be something to keep an eye on early. But I have a lot of confidence in how he'll be to start this season. And I guess we'll see here in a couple days.
Well, see, Mace, we're looking forward to it. As you said, the season beginning here in a couple of days, and also looking forward to you joining us every Tuesday at 9:30. Thank you, my friend. We appreciate you.
All right, fellas. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back, react to what C. Mace had to say there. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Doobie Brothers at Bridgestone Arena on October 25th? Well, head on over to YouTube, subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see the Doobie Brothers. Once you subscribe, email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. One winner will be chosen on Monday, October the 18th. And speaking of tickets, we have some tickets to give away to see Nashville SC take on Columbus at Nissan Stadium coming up on Wednesday, October the 20th. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a family 4-pack of tickets to see Nashville SC take on Columbus at Nissan Stadium coming up on Wednesday, October the 20th. Gonna be fun. Got a lot happening in the sporting world. The Titans in the thick of it. Preds getting started. Playoff push for Nashville SC. Some fun college football out east to watch with the Vols. I continue to say it. October, best sporting month of the year. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I still love March.
I know you do.
Yeah, March is hard to beat, but October has a very strong claim. Because the college games get better. They're all, you know, you're starting to get into rivalry games and just really good conference games and all the other stuff you mentioned. You got Lane Kiffin coming to Knoxville Saturday. It's going to be exciting.
Adam in Portland is just, he is absolutely convinced on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, that Lane Kiffin is just going to be mercilessly booed on Saturday. I guess repeatedly. Do you think that this is going to be the case?
I'm trying to remember. I think I was there when he was there as OC with Bama one time anyway.
Yeah.
I think. I don't remember anything specific, you know, but that's different. I guess that's different when you're the OC.
Like, there'll probably be some signs or something.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, like, when do you even have an opportunity to, I guess, do they even announce?
Coach Lane Kiffin.
I mean, I know at Nissan, it's like, and back into the game, having allowed 3 sacks, 10-1, everybody. You know, but I don't, Lane, and here he is, folks, after abandoning this program 13 years ago.
Gain of 12 yards by Matt Corral. Quarterback draw designed by Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, but I guess if they gave him an opportunity, I could see pretty good booing. I mean, I don't expect people to cheer him.
No.
Just because you would like someone to be your coach doesn't mean you cheer him when he's not your coach.
No.
So, yeah, but I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe it'll be a raucous house on there.
Oh, I think it'll be quite a scene. I'm really looking forward to this.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Will from Nashville texting in. Robbie, I recognize this is a massive if, but if Duchesne and Johansson play up to their full potential, is this a playoff team? If so, one that can make a run.
Full potential?
if Johansson and Duchesne play up to their full potential.
Oh, yeah.
It's a playoff team.
It's a playoff team. Could make a run. I mean.
Sure, could.
Yeah, like, again, those guys to their full potential, that's pretty good production. I think it's.
Now, if those guys are playing to their full potential and your first round matchup is the Colorado Avalanche, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, it could end fast. But both of them, I mean, what percent? So you're saying 100%, you know, producing based on what they have to give. I mean, what have they been at?
That's the question, right? Because my follow-up question is, what is their full potential
well,
now?
Well, that's fair. I still,
you know, we've seen Duchesne put up 70 points. Is he still a guy that has the full potential to put up 70 points?
I think he could
over
do
the
60.
Other side of 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could probably do 60.
Yeah, which would be awfully good.
Yeah, it would.
And I still think when Ryan Johansson comes in the postseason and at times is just, you know, the best player on the ice for stretches,
yeah.
I feel like that potential is pretty high.
I feel like it's high, too. I've also seen enough of Johansson at this point where, you know, I think he's been a really good player for a long time. There's always, I think he leaves you wanting a little bit more in the regular season.
But this is the question here is full potential.
I know.
Now, what does that look like right now? I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
If.
What does that mean for Forsberg?
Massive
those two?
If. Well, yeah. Well, that's a good question, too. That means
40?
If he's healthy, then maybe.
Yeah.
See, we can talk ourselves into the stand. You can get.
Look,
you can
I don't think
go
it's,
down the path of
look,
the Stanley Cup.
There's a path to the playoffs. Like this idea that they just have no chance to make the playoffs, I don't buy into. Like they can absolutely make the playoffs. Am I going to pick them to make the playoffs? I guess you have to find out later this week. I'll let you know.
There you
but,
go.
But there's a path.
Yeah, there's also a path to be what people think they're going to be.
Absolutely. That's you know, I think the term CMace used was unknown. There's a lot of excitement that comes with that. I think there's also a lot of, this could go really good or this could be really bad. One of the two.
I must say, after our conversation with CMace, like he didn't sound super high on like what Tomasino's bringing right out of the gate here.
No. I mean, look, I've not seen much from Glass and Tomasino yet. I think I like, well, obviously, look, they're kids. I like the potential. But I'm really interested to see how that goes starting on Thursday. So we'll find out. Got a lot to say on that front this week. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow, taking your thoughts all show long tomorrow on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5, The Game.